Mark Baser's on line 8, I've been told. Hey, Mark Baser, how are you?
Good. Line 8. I'm honored.
Yeah, you should see what we've got on 1 through 7. Holy cow. We don't get to 8.
I've been on 16 before, but to reach the tie.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's any consolation, 8 doesn't sound like much, but the guy on 9 isn't so good. So that's what we do.
Baser on me on?
Yeah, so Mark Baser, who's a regular at the Hideout and has been for, did you say 10 years?
It's 11 plus. 11.
He does an interview show out there, which has become a Chicago institution, and it became that some time ago. I'm a big fan, and you have your 100th episode coming up, is that correct?
Yeah, which I realize in the context of like a daily radio show is like 3 months, but for me it's a big deal. For me, I feel really good about it. Like, we've done 100 shows and 100 live events, and I'm excited about it.
Well, but it's a little confusing to me because you do the show there on stage, but then you also are on TV. This isn't the 100th episode on TV. This is the 100th stage live stage performance.
That's right. So we started in February of 2008, which was a great show. I feel like I started off on the right foot. We had the comedian Hannibal Buress, who went on to become a huge star. We had John Green, who wrote The Fault in Our Stars, but this was obviously years before he had done that. So we knew how to pick him back then. So.
Yeah, that was before Hannibal Buress ruined Bill Cosby's life, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well before. I mean, he had the... I didn't know him. I looked him up. I was like, we should get a comedian. And I went to Time Out Chicago, which was a regular, still around, but it was a regular monthly magazine at that time. And I looked up their best comedian, and it was Hannibal, like, or best emerging comedian, or best comedian Chicago, or something like that. Called him up, and he's like, yeah, sure, I'll come. And then he showed up and blew everybody away. And then 2 years later, he was, you know, famous.
One of the things I marvel about your show, Mark, I'll finish that thought in a minute. Let's make sure we serve you the best here. That is, so the 100th episode. Can I come to that show? Have you already done it? Or
would love for you and others to come. I'm really excited about it. I think I'm really looking forward to it. It's this Friday. It's at 6:30 at the Hideout, which is a bar on where they're doing the whole Sterling Bay thing, perhaps.
Don't put 15, it that 54. Way. Don't.
All right, it's right near the Home Depot. Is that better?
It's where they used to park the municipal and sanitation trucks or whatever it was.
They used to have the garbage trucks. And we have three guests and plus some special guests, but the three announced guests are we have this guy named Michael Morrissey, who writes comic books and has written two books in a new sci-fi series that he describes as Star Wars meets Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's really good. They're really good. We have a woman who's been on before, a rapper, who's now more of a singer. Her name is Kid Sister, and she got real big. She had a nice album that even like Kanye collaborated with her on in 2009, and then she had a few projects come out in the year since, but kind of stepped away from music. And now she's back. She's got a beautiful new song out, and I'm excited to have her on. And then which I think will be maybe an interview I'm honestly a little scared to do, because I don't want to screw it up, which will be Alex Kotlowitz, who wrote a very famous book in the 1990s called There Are No Children Here about the kids in the Henry Horner homes that are since gone. And now he's written a book called American Summer, Love and Death in Chicago. And it's just a heartbreaking and beautiful series of, I guess you can maybe call them, I just call them stories. Stories about families and kids and individuals and people who are in Chicago who were either perpetrated or were affected by violence one summer a few years ago.
Yeah,
and the book just came out, and it's, I don't know if you've had him on, but it's a remarkable book.
Yeah, I read the book, and then and Justin Kaufman did here too, and we were kind of, we both booked Kotlowitz for the same couple of days. And so we decided that he would do the interview and I would not, but then I interviewed Justin Kaufman about Alex Kotlowitz's book. So he and I did a little mini.
Well, I did interview you about you interviewing Justin.
3 degrees of separation now. So, yeah. But we did a little mini book club and sort of shared notes about the summer of, I think it was 2013.
It was
14 consecutive weeks or weekends. So each chapter or story is set in a particular time frame, and you kind of walk from late spring to the end of summer, early fall that year, on a year that the crime wasn't that bad in Chicago. You know, hundreds of people were shot and hundreds of people were killed, but it, by our standards, that year wasn't so terrible. And he just tells some amazingly personal, gritty stories. It's something. Why are you nervous about that?
Well, I thought the book was really affecting, and I want to do it and him and the people's stories in it justice. It's an uncomfortable topic. I'm a white dude. I don't live in the city proper. You know, it's not my world. And I just want to be, you know, respectful and also, you know, all those kind of things, and just, and make sure that I want Alex to come away feeling that it was a good, you know, like anybody. I want any interviewee to feel like it was a good interview.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about. When somebody's really done something that you admire and you think, boy, I have such an opportunity here to pull some really meaningful and interesting information from this person, I want to maximize the opportunity. And I feel that way a lot with some of our guests.
That is absolutely correct. And the other part is something that I think a lot of people probably struggle with is not why did I read it? I got a lot out of it, but what good does it do that I read it? You know what I mean? Like what is talking about it do to, you know, talking about somebody who wrote comic books is great fun, and the books are fun, and I'm really looking forward to that interview as well. And then people can go out and say they were entertained at a night on Friday night at the Hideout, and then they may go check out his books. But what value? I want to provide value, but I don't know how I'm doing that, I guess.
Well, that's the criticism of this book, too. That he doesn't have a prescription for anybody and doesn't pretend to. He says, no, that's not what I'm doing here. Don't ask me how to fix this.
Yeah, you know,
guys are shooting up guys and gals on the South and West Side, and he, I'm a little curious as to how difficult it was for him to at least point out some of the principal causes, or, you know, what are the deepest roots. I mean, he could have gone there. He doesn't even touch it. He doesn't even begin to talk about how to solve this. It's just a kind of multi-part narrative. That's it.
I don't want to put words in his mouth, and I'm certainly going to ask him about that. But my guess is, and this is true for me, there's a lot of people who, you know, we live in or around the city, and we really have no comprehension of the complexity of anybody's lives that aren't our own, right? Like, so this book takes us into a set of lives and provides not all, but some complexity that, you know.
Well, when you see how entrenched it is and how hopeless it is, or how different, like you said, Mark, you say, gee, I'm a little uncomfortable with this topic because I'm a guy living a comfortable life and I'm white, and this is not my experience. It's not my world. So who am I to relate to this? And I totally get that. When I was reading the book, one of the takeaways for me was, if nothing else, for those of us who say, well, these people just need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, or they need to just stay in school and get an education because it's free and there's scholarships out there. And that's all true. But you really do come face to face with how utterly irrelevant that is. That whole speech, that whole logic train is not stopping there for these people. And I really don't even blame them for that. That's their life. It's how they grew up. And, you know, there's exceptions to this rule. I know I'm painting with a broad brush, but a lot of the stories he tells are people who are without confidence, without direction, you know, sometimes without education, and without even a sense of you know, how that would help. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the one, I agree with that, all that, and then the one word that he uses a number of times is trauma. Like, people are, you know, everybody, I mean, that's not to say that other people in the world and in Chicago aren't living with trauma, but the trauma really reverberates.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like it's very hard in some neighborhoods to escape, you know, I guess the cliche term is cycle of violence, but it's really like a cycle of trauma.
I agree on that, too. In fact, you know, if you have in your head that these gangbangers are hardened criminals, they're not human like you or me. They seem to be indifferent to it all. Look what they're doing. That's not true. You know, a lot of, they were all born innocent little babies who, boy, this sounds apologist, doesn't it? This sounds so liberal. But my point is that he made me think about how those people get that way. And I think if you grow up in that environment, if you live in that world, it takes a sort of extraordinary effort to see it differently or break out. And it's, you know, there's a little bit of there, but for the grace, I think, go a lot of people when you read this book. And I can understand why he didn't put a stamp on what the fix is, because in a way it's kind of disheartening, isn't it? There are some elevating moments, but the book's kind of disheartening too, don't you think, Mark?
I could only read a chapter at a time, and then I had to go and do something else.
Well, weren't you? Which Mark Baser's on a phone. His 100th anniversary, 100th episode, performance of the interview show is at the Hideout Bar in Chicago. It's coming up Friday night at 6:30. You can still get tickets, right, Mark?
Yeah, there's some tickets left.
And one of the people he's interviewing is Alex Kotlowitz's, Alex Kotlowitz, and his book is, what is it, An American Summer?
American Summer, Love and Death in Chicago.
Yeah.
There's also things that you just blow your mind. Like, you know, like there's a kid who was in an orphanage, and the orphanage, the people who worked at the orphanage, who was in the western suburb somewhere, just mistreated the kids in just brutal fashion.
Think
that's a story out of Dickens. But this was in the 90s when that kid was in the orphanage. Like, these, you know, it's which I guess is now history, the 90s, but it still feels uncomfortably close to now.
So there's still cars on the road that were alive then, right? I mean, it's not that long ago. So one of the stories I think he tells, which is just kind of mind-boggling to me, is the one about the white guy living in a high-rise tower not far from where I'm standing right now, off of Lakeshore Drive and Huron or Ontario, one of those streets, and he's involved in real estate and his family, you know, they're all very close, but they're also very coarse. They party hard. They're not without their own sins. There's racism in the family. And he decides to adopt one of these young black kids.
And, that's right.
And the family, one of his uncles, or I think it's an uncle, comes up to him and goes, you know, I love you. You love me. I'm done. You know, we are no longer close. I don't know if he said we're not family anymore, but he walked away from him because he adopted this young black kid. And what that was like for that kid and the effort this young man made and how it eventually played out, I was really intrigued by that storyline. I had no idea where that was going to end.
That story among, I mean, others, but that one in particular, just it seemed like if you had made it into a movie,
yes,
people wouldn't believe that it was true.
I know, because it's so saccharine, right? This notion that I'm just going to bust out of my... Because this guy was on... He was an alcoholic, and he was on his way to ending his life early, too, this white guy. And then, but by golly, he sort of wills himself to do right. And you're thinking, this does not happen. This does not happen. It happened right here.
And it has, like many of the stories, an ending that's like life, I guess, neither comforting nor sad at the same time. It's not a, there's no tight bow at the end of it, but it's not, it leaves you with some hope as well. So, you know,
the other thing, you're right about that story. Can I just mention one other story and get your reaction to? And that is, or did you get the impression too? Some of the kids are straight A students. and they've been accepted to colleges, and they are trying to do, and they are good kids. They ride their bicycles, they go to parks, they watch TV shows, they play video games, they look like you and me and our kids. But they live in a different place. And it's day-to-day life is so perilous for them, right? Like, the kids are in a car, and they're like a lot of 17-year-olds. They're going to go to see some other friends because there's some music at the park, and they go to the park. But now there's a gang shooting, or you know, somebody looked at somebody wrong, or somebody mistook somebody, and now this very good kid gets caught in crossfire, or maybe one of his buddies makes a mistake, and he gets instantly tangled into it. I guess the point of all of that, Mark, is that I got a sense of how. What's the word? You know, how quickly their lives can change, even though they've made all of the right decisions. Perilous isn't the right word, but they really are on, it's a P word too, and it's not precipice, but they're, you know, just dancing on this knife's edge of having a nice, fruitful life and it all going to hell in a heartbeat, right?
Yeah, or something that a person witnessed when they were young, or a mistake that a person made him or herself. I mean, who... You know, reading it, I just, you know, it's who hasn't felt the desire to take revenge or vengeance on somebody? Like, it's hard not to feel that way at times. And if you're caught up in something and a friend of yours is, I mean, got, you know, what would happen if a loved one of yours, something happened to a loved one of yours? You'd, you know, it would take everything you got to not do something, you know, so.
I don't know why you're going to interview, Alex Kalowicz, you should interview me, and I'll just...
About Justin.
No, about his book. I'll just tell you all about his book. I have done this
book. You know you're welcome on the show anytime.
No, I do not know that. I've been on that stage before. I'll be in the audience a lot, but I'm not going up there anymore. I got nothing else to say.
What? That's ridiculous.
I have... Kalowicz is not an example of this.
I'll put you on seat 10.
Right, as opposed to line 8, which you're on. I have interviewed people, though.
Line 8, I just can't believe it.
I'm having a thought here, Mark. I've interviewed people before where I've read the book, right, or the article, or seen the movie, or whatever it is, and I really get immersed in it, and I become an advocate for it. And then I find that I'm better at telling the story than they are.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing that I'm always cautious of is, like, don't do the 5-minute plot summary. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's there's some people who are good at writing and some people who are good at talking. And then sometimes you get people who are good at both. And that's obviously what you want in a guest.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Alex has done countless interviews. He's going to be great. But yeah, I mean, or you know what I mean? You know, this happened the other day. I found something I had written several years ago, and I don't remember writing it. Like, and I wish I hadn't. That's very good.
Hadn't written it?
But my name was on it, so I guess I did.
Well, that's like listening back to a show you did on the radio, and you thought, boy, that felt good. And then you listen back to it and go, wow. That felt better than it sounded. Oops.
It felt so good. Mark just left it there.
I'm out of time. So Mark Baser, who's very funny and gets great guests, and I'm a little angry when I see your guest list sometimes. I'm like, wait a minute. How do I not know about this person? How did you get him and we didn't get him? Mark Baser is going to be on stage. Again, it's at The Hideout. What's the street address? Just Google The Hideout. Where is that again?
1654 West Wabanzia.
Wabanzia.
Tucked away near that Home Depot where they have excellent hot dogs.
Where is that? So what's happening with that development over there?
Well, the last I heard is that there's just been meeting after meeting, and it's going to... It's going to the next level, and it's very near where it would be totally approved. But now we have a new mayor, so I'm not sure how that changes things. You know, I know that this was a thing that Emmanuel really wanted to get done and leave as part of his legacy, and I don't know if it can be held up at this point. It's a development, for those who don't know, it's turning an area that, you know, had been, like John said, vehicles, like trash vehicles, et cetera, and also the Asinkle steel mill and some other area that's really underdeveloped into a big development, but at issue is taxpayer money that's being used for it, mixed income housing, park space, all those kind of issues are kind of percolating to the surface.
You know,
the little hideout is smack in the middle of it all.
Yeah, right. So you go there, they don't serve food there. You're going to get a beer, and you're going to stand there, and you're going to watch this thing, and you're going to like it. My brother and sister-in-law joined Brenda and I last time you did a show, and we all had a great time. The Petersons come to the show with us a lot. I'm name-dropping the Petersons. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be...
They have potato chips now.
Do they? All right, well then, order those. They're delicious. All right, Mark Baser, have a good show, and I will see you in
John.
Studio one of these days soon. By the way, as you leave... we were just talking about Alex Kotlowitz's book. Did you read Gang Leader for a Day?
No.
Are you familiar with that book, Gang
I'm
Leader
not.
For a Day?
I'm not.
Just make a note of that. Gang Leader for a Day.
Okay.
University of Chicago sociology student named Sudhir Venkatesh. I think he's from India or Pakistan. I don't think he grew up in Chicago. And he decided to do for a project. He says, well, I'm at the U of C. I'll study the gangs. So he's walking around the projects over there, and he's knocking on doors and mixing in with people who look at him, you know, curiously. And it's dangerous what he ends up doing.
Yeah.
And he almost ends up getting killed. One guy saves him, and he turns out to be a gang leader, and he befriends him, and he says, well, listen, I'm actually writing a report about gangs and how they work, and could I follow you around? So he then becomes not an apprentice, but he follows the gang leader around for about a year. And at one point, it's a very interesting description of how gangs used to work in Chicago, right? Which was you would have a gang leader. You would have a boss who would control a whole neighborhood. Part of the problem that Kotlowitz talks about is that you don't even have that control anymore. The reason we have so many people getting shot that aren't even involved is because there's no organization. It's just a bunch of block-by-block thugs, and they're all shooting everybody left and right, and there's no sense of it. You know, not that any of it makes sense, but at least, you know, the mob had rules, and there was some organization. And when Venkatesh wrote about the gang life on the South Side, he fell in with one of these guys. Anyway, at one point, he says to him, you know, you've got a pretty easy job, right? You drive around in your Cadillac. You've got all the money in the world from all the drugs that are coming in and the weapons that you guys are selling. And, you know, your life is actually pretty cushy. And the guy says, do you think my job is easy? So for one day, he says, you will be the gang leader, and you are going to see what it's like to run a gang on the South Side. So for a day, then, he's a gang leader for a day. The book is not about that day. It's about the whole year. But certainly a pivotal point is when he then has to decide, like a couple of his guys on a street corner are not selling the drugs properly. They're not getting the money. They're not respecting the turf. And so what are you supposed to do if you're the gang leader? You have to beat them up. So they pull up, and the two kids are there. And he says, okay, first of all, you got to decide who's right, who's wrong. And now you need to punish them. That's the job of a gang leader. And Sudhir Venkatesh is like, well, I don't know what to do. It's a very good book. I highly recommend that one, too.
Wow. I'm definitely going to read that.
I'm telling you, interview me. Don't get the authors on. Just put me on.
No. This is a new concept. Book John's read, interviewing you about books you've read. I'm in.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Mark, Friday night at 6:30 at the Hideout. So long.
All right. I appreciate it.
Yep, you betcha.